well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Going to be talking with Amy Swearer in just a little bit from Advancing America's Freedom. She was out in Minnesota yesterday, was supposed to testify before the House Public Safety Committee about a gun ban bill, magazine ban bill, and then was told, no, you can't. Her written testimony was rejected as well. Too many hyperlinks, apparently, is what the Democrats told Amy Swearer. The good news is that Swearer ultimately was allowed to testify. She was basically shamed into testifying by her. Well, the Democrats were shamed into allowing her to testify. So she was able to give her perspective on these gun and magazine ban bills, which failed to get out of committee. The House Public Safety Committee, equally divided, 10 Democrats, 10 Republicans. So in order for Republican bills to get through, at least one Democrat has to sign on. In order for Democrat bills to get through, at least one Republican has to sign on. And that didn't happen yesterday. There was very powerful and emotional testimony offered by proponents of the gun and magazine ban bills. Parents whose children had been shot in the Annunciation Church shooting last August, talking about the impact that the shooting had on their lives and continues to have on their lives. There was a physician who talked about the injuries that he had treated as a result of the Annunciation shooting. But the testimony was entirely emotional. Again, it was powerful. But I don't believe that any of those proponents made the case as to why these laws or how these laws or these bills, if they were to become law, would prevent shootings like what we saw at Annunciation Church. And in the end, I think logic and reason, the hard truths that individuals like Amy Swearer brought to the table, won out. Now, these are just two bills, part of a much larger anti-gun package offered by Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. In fact, today there's going to be a House hearing on a bill that would obliterate firearms preemption law in Minnesota and allow localities to pass their own gun control laws that are more restrictive than what is in place at the state level. So Minnesota gun owners not out of the woods. In fact, even with these bills, Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus Chair Brian Strausser said, these bills can be offered as floor amendments to basically any piece of legislation that gets to the floor of the House. So gun owners are, and Second Amendment advocates are going to need to remain on guard throughout the session because there are more bills to come and there are going to be a lot of opportunities to play parliamentary tricks with bills that have been defeated. But as for these particular bills, House File 3433, which is the semi-auto ban, House File 3402, which is the magazine ban, these bills would have banned not just the sale and transfer manufacture of so-called assault weapons and large capacity magazines, would have banned possession. There was no grandfather clause at all for magazines over 10 rounds. And in order to maintain legal possession of the gun that you already have, you'd be required to get a certificate of ownership from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension in Minnesota. You would have to submit your fingerprints. There'd be basically a gun registry. And not only that, but you would have to be open up your home for law enforcement to come in without a warrant to inspect unannounced and make sure that you are storing your so-called assault weapon properly. Again, because of the divided nature of the House, equal number of Republicans and Democrats, that holds true for these committees as well. And no Republican crossed over in support of these bills, so the bills failed to make it out of committee. But again, the threat is still there. So Amy Swearer, as I mentioned, was one of those offering some powerful testimony of her own. I mean, again, the proponents of these gun control laws, the individuals who were impacted by the Annunciation shooting, I don't discount their feelings. I don't discount the horrors that they have gone through and the hardships that they continue to go through at all. But I don't think they made the case as to why these bills or how these bills would stop a shooting like this from happening in the future. And ultimately, legislation should be based on policy and not personal feelings. And when it comes to the policy side of things, I think that Rob Doerr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, Amy Lerney from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, Amy Swear, there was a one other individual, I'm blanking on his name right now, but I thought they all offered a very reasonable perspective, a fact-based perspective about why gun control is not the way to address this type of violence. I was able to talk with Amy last night, a couple of hours after the hearing took place, about her testimony and what else she heard during the hearing. It was a great conversation. I really appreciate her carving out a few minutes of what was a very busy day. Take a look and a listen. Amy, thanks so much for coming on the program today. I really appreciate it. I know it's been a very busy day for you at the Minnesota State Capitol.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, you know, when I invited you, I thought this would be your one chance to speak about these gun control bills. But I'm glad to see that the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus goaded, persuaded, convinced the Democrat majority on this committee today to let you submit your testimony rather than continue to disinvite you at the last minute because you had hyperlinks in the written testimony that you submitted.
Yeah, no, I am incredibly grateful to the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, both for inviting me out in the first place, but also for really standing up for not just me, but there were a number of other people who, you know, same issue. We went to submit our written testimony. Some of us were very much planning on speaking today. And, you know, we get these emails saying, oh, no, we've rejected this because it has hyperlinks. And I know there was some back and forth in the hearing itself. But at the end of the day, I mean, we have receipts. There were plenty of other people on the other side of this who, even if they weren't allowed to speak because the other side was also limited in terms of you know, numbers, they were allowed to post officially their written submissions with hyperlinks in ways that we were not. It's hard to look at that and suggest that that was in good faith. But again, incredibly grateful to Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus and to Anna Leamy in particular, who used what limited time she had to give us a shout out and to let everyone in that audience and everyone online know exactly what was going on.
And I think it was really important to do that. I mean, the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus noted that, you know, the attempts to limit testimony, and I believe originally it was going to be four speakers, a total of 8 minutes for each side. So each speaker would get essentially 2 minutes to make their case for or against these bills. That a lot of that was meant to control the narrative around these bills. And, you know, I think we saw that today. We saw some, and obviously I'm talking about today, I'm recording this interview on Tuesday night. This is going to be going up on Wednesday for Cam & Company. So, you know, we saw some very powerful testimony from parents who lost children, from parents whose children were injured in the attack at Annunciation Church, from a gym teacher. What we didn't hear, though, Amy, was anything beyond those incredibly painful and heartfelt personal stories. And this ultimately is going to impact individual lives, absolutely. But we are talking about a policy decision here. And that was something that seemed like the Democrats did not really want to discuss, the policy itself.
No, absolutely. And it's easy to see why they wanted to limit discussion on this. It became very easy for them to sort of control the narrative as essentially look at these grieving parents. And I want to be clear, these are grieving parents. This is very real for them. This was devastating to their community. This is something that will take a lifetime for them to really grapple with. And as I said, you know, in the few minutes that I finally got after this goading, we're all on the same page. You know, I've been doing gun policy now for almost a decade, and I've yet to meet a single person whose heart does not break, who sits there and does not understand that it is a terrible thing what has happened here, and that everybody wants this to stop. But we can't allow this false narrative, and push back with. And I understand they're hard truths. They're hard truths for people to hear. But this idea that any of this would have been changed if we had just made it a felony to have a pistol grip for law-abiding ordinary Minnesotans, right? That if we had turned hundreds of thousands of lawful gun owners in this state into felons, that this somehow would have affected this shooter's capacity to cause this trauma. And it's just not true. And we're not making these people's lives any easier. We're not stopping this from happening again. And we certainly are not implementing good policy just because we're allowing the narrative of emotion to control us. And so I'm grateful to have been able to push back on that a little bit. And I understand it's a hard thing to hear in the midst of tragedy, but I'm grateful that that narrative wasn't able to control at least the entire time, because we all know that that was the point. And very quickly, you know, I've heard from others who were there today that the last time this committee held a similar hearing on these same issues, I mean, you had hours of testimony from many, many people on both sides. And so I think, again, it's just hard to look at this and to think it was anything other than a purposeful attempt to control the narrative and to essentially dare us to say anything contrary to what these grieving parents are saying. And frankly, that's a terrible thing. That's a terrible thing to do to those parents. And it's a terrible thing to do to witnesses on the other side, because it becomes about emotion and not about good policy.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't think this is a one-off, by the way. I think you're going to see a repeat of this throughout the session this year. Tim Walz is not just calling for a ban on semi-automatic firearms, large capacity magazines, quote unquote, but, you know, he wants a excise tax on firearms and ammunition. He wants, to expand the state's red flag law. He wants mandatory insurance requirements for gun owners. He's got a laundry list of proposals. He wants to eradicate Minnesota's firearms preemption law. And this is going to be the argument that is used to try to advance every one of these gun control bills, right? That if you don't side with us, then you don't care about little kids getting murdered. That's their argument, essentially.
It's ironic in some sense that this is what the entire hearing became about, because as I wrote for pages in the testimony, the written testimony that I think, as far as I'm aware, still has not been officially posted or accepted by them. The Annunciation shooting, for as devastating as that was, that is an anomaly in terms of multiple victim shootings in Minnesota and around the nation, right? Most of those types of shootings are not carried out by people who acquired those weapons lawfully, as was the case with the perpetrator in Annunciation. I went through the data for Minnesota for those multiple victim shootings. And there's a very clear pattern of seeing the same types of that small set of repeat violent offenders, people who are already prohibited from obtaining firearms, who obtain them anyway, and who go on to commit these heinous, often gang-related, drug-related attacks that have killed far more people in Minnesota than the Annunciation shooter ever could have imagined. And what's difficult about that is to sit in that hearing and to know when you go through case by case by case, so many of these people, it's not just that they were prohibited, it's that they literally should have been in prison. So many of these people were on probation who had violated their probation. There was a guy who was on probation, gets picked up with 41 grams of fentanyl and a machine gun. And they do you understand how much 41 grams of fentanyl is? If you do the math, it's like 20,000 lethal doses. It's an insane amount of fentanyl. And they looked at this guy and said, yeah, he's fine. Release him to the public. And then we're all going to play this shocked Elmo meme, right, that he goes on to shoot a bunch of people. And so it's difficult, because to sit there knowing that many of these policies were advocated for by people in that same committee, who are now willing to turn around and to blame lawful gun owners in Minnesota, to scapegoat them to this extent, when so many of these people just should have been in prison in the first place. That's an incredible thing to witness, the audacity of that. And so I think you're right. Unfortunately, this is going to continue, but we need to be able to continue pushing back on that narrative.
Absolutely. And you do that again with the facts. I think gun owners, Have their own emotional stories to tell. I don't think that Democrats particularly care about those stories. I'm not sure that many of them care about the facts either, to be quite honest. But, you know, all it takes at this point is, you know, in Minnesota anyway, to persuade one or two lawmakers to say no. And, you know, this anti-gun agenda comes to a screeching halt. You know, one of the things that I took away from the testimony from the supporters of the gun magazine ban, and I believe it was the first mom who testified, and she talked about the 2 minutes that went by where this killer was able to fire, you know, uninterrupted into this church. And, you know, again, we could be talking about a semi-automatic rifle, lever action gun, revolver. If you don't have anybody there to fire back, until law enforcement shows up, then yes, innocent lives are going to be at risk. Innocent people will die. And I know that this is not a topic that Democrats would allow, pass out of the state Senate. But, you know, I think we also need to talk about hardening up our schools. I know that Governor Tim Walz had apparently rejected a request by private schools to see some grant money to upgrade their security, including parochial schools. But also, again, the idea that there is either a school resource officer, an armed staff member, or more than one armed staff member, but somebody that can be that first line of defense, so that when somebody with murderous intent shows up, they can't attack innocent people for 2 minutes straight before somebody shoots back.
Right. You know, and that's sort of, again, I think one of the factors that gets lost in this conversation about the Annunciation church shooter. I mean, it's not just that, you know, when you look at other mass shootings in this state, you've had several other shootings that were much more deadly with not, quote unquote, assault weapons, including the deadliest mass shooting in 2005, again, at a school with a handgun and a shotgun. But, you know, one of the other factors that I think it's lost is, and again, two deaths is horrific, 27 injuries, horrific. But this would have been so much worse if that individual had been able to get into that church. I mean, people forget he was firing from outside of the church.
Right.
And to have 116 rounds fired in 2 minutes, which, you know, again, he changed his magazine at least 4 times. You know, if you make him change it 10 times, he has all the time in the world. But that factor alone, that he was not inside, that he was firing blindly, saved so many lives. And the lesson that they refuse to learn from that is that it saves lives keeping these dangerous, violent people bent on mass destruction, keeping them outside of the building in the first place, saves lives. And it's something that again, they just refuse to take away the right lesson. And I don't think that serves Minnesotans. It certainly would not have served the children in that church that day to just say, oh, well, if only he didn't have a pistol grip. No, it's, you know, and again, I understand entirely why they want to turn this back into emotion. But for as hard as it is to say, when you listen to what those parents and those other testifiers were saying, it's clear to me that they truly are buying into this illusion. And it is an illusion, right? About how these guns work and what this man is actually doing. I mean, just sitting in the audience for all of this, you could hear people snicker, you know, when other testifiers on our end were talking about these guns are guns that are used for hunting. And I heard someone say they would obliterate the deer. When you look at hunting laws in Minnesota, a 223 round is the bare minimum that they allow, right, for hunting deer. It's just a complete lack of understanding how guns work. And so it's easy to just sort of ignore that when people, and it rightly, justifiably have the emotion and the grief. But we have to, as public policy people, as certainly as elected officials, we have to be able to separate that and to learn the right lessons in spite of that grief.
Absolutely. Well, again, I'm really, really glad that you were able to present your testimony today today. You know, again, I can't thank you enough for all of the work that you're doing, to, you know, educate folks again on the realities of violent crime, the realities of what these mass shootings typically look like. And again, the importance of safeguarding our right to keep and bear arms, including to protect ourselves against people with evil intent in their heart. So, Amy, thank you so much. Thanks for carving out a couple of minutes today, too. I know it's been a very long day for you.
And no, I appreciate it. And Cam, I always have all the time in the world for you.
Well, thanks so much. We'll do this again very soon. Amy Swearer joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks again to Amy for joining us on the program. Looking forward to talking to her again very soon. And again, Minnesota gun owners, I wish that I had better news, but you guys are going to be under constant threat all session long. So you really do need to continue to stay engaged. Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus is doing a fantastic job of keeping people informed. So if you're not already a member and you're a Minnesota gun owner, you should be joining. But make sure that you are signed up for the legislative alerts because they're going to be on top of things, letting you know who you need to talk to, when you need to talk to them, what bills are coming up in committee, and hopefully what bills will be defeated going forward. Now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of New Mexico where, you know, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has been calling for a gun ban of her own. She didn't get her way during the regular session. I have not seen her threaten to call lawmakers back for a special session as she has done in the past. Although I guess that does remain a possibility. And, you know, once again, blaming lawful gun owners for the actions of violent criminals, right? That's what gun control is all about. And in this case, state of New Mexico, too many judges there, too many prosecutors offering sweetheart plea deals, too many judges accepting these sweetheart plea deals. And violent offenders are getting away with a slap on the wrist, including this case we're going to be talking about today. Man booked on kidnapping and child abuse gets probation a year later. So this individual, Kyle Ekman, he's 21. He was arrested last August. He had driven from Texas to New Mexico with a 15-year-old girl against her family's wishes, potentially against her wishes, too, it sounds like. When he was pulled over, he got out of the car, said he had a gun, didn't have a gun, but he said he did, threatened to shoot a New Mexico State Police officer. Then once he was in custody, he told the girl not to talk. After she was taken to a hospital, she told officers that Ekman had allegedly threatened to kill her and her family if she did not go with him. After he was read his rights, Ekman told police that he had given the 15-year-old his phone to text her mom and then read her mother's text saying that she should tell him to drive her home and that she was a minor. Well, KOAT in Albuquerque reports that February 16th, after Ekman had spent 179 days in pretrial custody, he reached a plea deal with prosecutors. The deal, 18 months suspended and supervised probation, counseling and therapy required, no contact with the victim allowed. So Ekman pleaded guilty to the aggravated fleeing charge. But the kidnapping in the first degree, child abuse, bribery of a witness, aggravated assault of a police officer, all of those charges, and contributing to the delinquency of a minor, all of those charges dropped. And a young adult, 21 years old, he is an adult, who kidnapped this teen against her wishes, did basically 6 months behind bars. And that's it. That's the entirety of the sentence that he will serve. And again, Michelle Lujan Grisham, far too many Democrats in the New Mexico Senate, in the New Mexico House. You would look at a crime like this and say, well, what can we do to make it harder for people to legally acquire a firearm? Thank goodness he didn't have a gun, but he threatened one. So what can we do to make it harder for people to legally own a gun? What can we do to ban commonly owned firearms, commonly owned magazines? What can we do to ban these items that are protected by the Constitution? Instead of what can we do to ensure that somebody who kidnaps a teenage girl, takes her across state lines, knows that she's a minor, spends more than 6 months in custody awaiting trial, only to be given a plea deal that results in nothing more than probation. Now, today's Armed Citizen story from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. I will note that this is preliminary at this point, so details could change. But a woman is claiming self-defense in a shooting that left her boyfriend critically injured. This happened Sunday night, according to the Tuscaloosa County Sheriff's Office. It was about 7:30 Sunday evening. Police were dispatched to a home in Tuscaloosa, and they found a man had been shot multiple times. He was taken to a local hospital. Last report listed in critical condition. The woman who shot him was there on scene. She told police that she lived with the man, that she was in a relationship with the man for the past several years. She also said that there had been a history of domestic violence, which, according to police, those reports were confirmed. So apparently this was not the first time that law enforcement called out to that residence. The sheriff's office says that on Sunday evening, the woman went to a vehicle that was inoperable there on the property because she was trying to get away from her boyfriend during an argument. So she gets into this car, locks the door. She can't leave because, again, it's not running, but she at least has a door between her and her abusive boyfriend, or allegedly abusive boyfriend. While she's there in the vehicle, she calls 911. She asks for police to come out. She says that her boyfriend is beating on the windows of the vehicle, trying to break in and reach her. When police got to the scene, they found the man had been shot several times. The woman said that she shot him in self-defense. Woman was not arrested at the scene. She obviously has been interviewed. The individual who was shot, again, at last report in critical condition, may not be able to be interviewed at this point. But at this point, it does sound like it was self-defense. Again, I will note the preliminary nature of that. During the investigation, things might change. But if they do, we will certainly bring you the latest details as they become available. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. An angel in El Paso who stopped a teen who was accused of robbing a 85-year-old woman who was doing some shopping. The El Paso Times reports that it happened on February 18th. The woman was inside a Dollar Tree store. She said she turned her back for a second, and this teen grabbed her wallet out of the shopping basket and then took off running. When the first police officer responding to the call of the robbery in progress got there, he saw an individual being held down on the ground by a man. This is across the parking lot from where the Dollar Tree store was. The individual who was holding that guy down, a day laborer, told police in Spanish that he was working when he heard a lady yelling for help, saying that she was being robbed. And then he saw 17-year-old Jacob Hayden Kennedy Smith. I don't think he knew his name, but that's who was arrested here, running away. Ran after him, got him down to the ground. Woman told the man captured on a police body cam, God bless you. You're God's angel. Thank you. The police say that Smith arrested on charges of theft of property with an enhancement because of the elderly victim. Also charged with possession of less than a gram of a controlled substance. The El Paso Police Department praising the actions of that Good Samaritan, saying that they also urge the community to be careful when intervening. Situations, they say, can escalate quickly. Suspects may be armed or unpredictable. They say if you witness a crime, call 911. Be a good witness. Avoid physical confrontation if possible. Your safety comes first. But we're also praising the quick action of this labor. Now, listen, I do think it's good advice. If you are unarmed, you don't have the means to protect yourself, intervening can go sideways very quickly because you don't know if that individual has a weapon on them. And we have sadly seen many incidents of Good Samaritans who are trying to do the right thing become victims themselves because the person that they're trying to stop actually did have a knife or a gun or a club or even just fists and feet and ends up, hurting and killing in some cases these Good Samaritans. So I don't disagree with the El Paso Police Department's advice. But on the other hand, if you do carry on a regular basis, if you are in a position where you can protect yourself and you are in a position where you believe that you can prevent the loss of life, or in this case, prevent the loss of property, and do so while protecting yourself, frankly, we need more of those folks in this world. So in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, maybe not the smartest thing, but the right thing. This anonymous Good Samaritan in El Paso, Texas, coming to the aid of this 85-year-old woman. We thank you for your very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I do want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Not sure what we'll be talking about tomorrow. There is so much legislation, though, that has been introduced around the country. We really are in full swing now. We've got bills on the move, both good and bad, in a number of states, including Tennessee, Oklahoma, Iowa, Nebraska. These are just the states that I've looked at just in the past, 15 or 20 minutes. So we may end up doing just a legislative roundup tomorrow just to kind of get folks caught up on where things stand across the country. If something big breaks, obviously we'll be covering that as well. And I would encourage you, check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT when you go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, and you get 60% off your membership, no matter what tier of support you choose. And no matter what tier of support you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. I will say, if you are a Gold or Platinum member, one of the Benny's is that you get to take part in our weekly live chat, 1:30 Eastern on Wednesday afternoons. Hot Air's Ed Morrissey and myself. Looking forward to doing that later today. And I'd love for you to be a part of that as well. So again, BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, and hopefully we'll see you in the live chat. If not, have a great rest of your hump day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.